The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
What up, world? Welcome on and all to another episode of The Ocho, presented to you in partnership, as always, with SB Nation's bloggingtheboys.com. My name, RJ Ochoa. You know me, of course, from BTB and from right here as your humble host on The Ocho. This is our episode, our second episode for a Thursday, the third day, August 13th, 2020. We hope all is well wherever you are. We hope you're happy, safe, healthy, and that you are just as excited as we are. That's right. It is our second episode for Thursday because we had to have an emergency episode, baby. It had been a while since we had to fire up the sirens, slide down the pole, jump in the special gear and outfits, and get up in the podcast studio because the Dallas Cowboys on Wednesday night, word was reported that they are signing defensive end Everson Griffin. Oh yeah, that's right. The thing you wanted the Dallas Cowboys to do, they did it. What world are we living in? I mean, seriously, what universe do we live in now here in 2020? I mean, that question is a difficult one to answer for a lot of reasons, but let's look at what the Dallas Cowboys have done since the calendar turned to 2020. They moved on from Jason Garrett. Wish him well. They hired Mike McCarthy. You didn't even really interview anybody. What are you doing there with Mike McCarthy and everything, Cowboys? Then everything changed. They hired a staff that we love. It includes Joe Philbin, Jim Tomsula, John Fossil, Mike Nolan. I mean, all sorts of people that we are all enthused about. Most importantly, the Cowboys kept Kellen Moore on as offensive coordinator, which people were very, very, very excited about. Then comes free agency. They're able to re-sign Amari Cooper. Okay, that's cool, but what else are you going to do? Where else are you going to get some people? Gerald McCoy, bam. Ha-ha Clinton Dix, bam. Don Terry Poe, bam. Alden Smith, whoa. Okay, bam. All right. Lots of things happening for the Dallas Cowboys. And then comes the NFL draft. What are you going to do? Kalyvon Chaisson? No. CeeDee Lamb. Bam. Trayvon Diggs. Bam. Neville Gallimore. Bam. Reggie Robinson. Bam. Tyler Biadasz. Bam. The Cowboys just kept doing thing after thing after thing after thing this offseason that we all approved of. The only thing to date that the Dallas Cowboys did not hit a home run on this offseason was extending quarterback Dak Prescott, but that fight, they can fight another day. But I want to get to the point at hand because it belongs in the BAM category. The Dallas Cowboys bringing in Everson Griffin. All right, people have been saying for months that the Cowboys need to go out. They need to get Jadeveon Clowney, who, by the way, it was reported the Cowboys were near the top of his list along with the New Orleans Saints, or Everson Griffin. I want to give a big shout out to our friend of the show, John Owning from the Dallas Morning News. He's been banging the Everson Griffin drum for a long time. All right, and on Wednesday, it finally happened. It finally came to fruition. The Dallas Cowboys went and got a talented pass rusher to play on the opposite side of DeMarcus Lawrence. It really happened. They're no longer just going to rest on their laurels and hope that it works out for them. All right. I want to read you a tweet from Evan Kaplan, the great Evan Kaplan, great ESPN researcher, on Twitter at EpCap, by the way. Everson Griffin lined up as a right defensive end for 91% of snaps in the last two seasons, had all 13.5 sacks from that spot. DeMarcus Lawrence lined up as a left defensive end for 91% of snaps in the last two seasons, had all 15.5 sacks from that spot. That is 29 sacks over the last two seasons from those defensive ends that line up at those two spots. Those defensive ends now play for the Dallas Cowboys. That really happened. The Dallas Cowboys really said, we need a right defensive end opposite of DeMarcus Lawrence. What are we going to do? Are we just going to cross our fingers and hope for Tyrone Crawford and Alden Smith? Those things might happen, but let's not waste time, baby. We got some extra salary cap flexibility. Let's go get an Everson Griffin, and go get an Everson Griffin they did. The deal, as reported by Kimberly Martin of ESPN, is a one-year deal worth $6 million, $3 million in base salary, $3 million in roster bonuses. Just chef's kiss, Cowboys, all right? And here's the thing, all right? I believe that at one point in time, somebody sat Stephen Jones down and explain the way compensatory picks work to him, and explain the comp formula, and explain that if you add free agents at this time, it impacts the comp formula. If you do it this time, you wait, it doesn't, etc. The Cowboys kind of look like geniuses. And I would not say that lightly, all right? Because the Cowboys let Robert Quinn go in free agency to the NFC North, where they just plucked Everson Griffin from, and they are very likely going to get a third or a fourth round compensatory pick for him next offseason. They're probably going to get another one for Byron Jones, whose name will come up later, by the way, with our special guest. And the Cowboys, meanwhile, are going and getting all these players that can kind of give them that production on these one-year deals without factoring them into the compensatory formula, like Everson Griffin. And, oh, yeah, if Everson Griffin balls out for the Cowboys, gets a big-time deal from whoever next year, then guess what? The compensatory train keeps ongoing, and the Cowboys might get a compensatory pick for Everson Griffin in 2022. I know that's forecasting. That's looking way down the road. That's maybe a possibility. Who knows? But the reality is that it is a possibility, because the Cowboys are playing this thing very, very, very smart, and kudos to them. Look, I want to get into who Everson Griffin is as a football player, and to do that, we need to bring in the best. It's time to bring on our special guest. He covers the Minnesota Vikings for The Athletic, one of the wisest people on the Minnesota Vikings beat. Arif Hassan joins us next. His Twitter handle, if you want to follow him, you should, is at Arif Hassan NFL. Again, the best in the business when it comes to the Minnesota Vikings. Arif Hassan joins us next, right here on The Ocho. Pleased to be joined now by a very special guest, the world-renowned, internationally famous, famous across multiple galaxies, the one and only. You know him from The Athletic, covering the Minnesota Vikings, Arif Hassan. Arif, how goes it, my dude?
It's going pretty well. You might have gotten the wrong Arif Hassan. I don't know how famous I am, man.
How many are there, to your knowledge?
Not many, but if you Google my name, I'm not likely to be the one that comes up, so who knows?
Interesting. I don't know a lot of RJ Ochoas, but when I was in high school, there was a girl named RJ, which made for, like the least clever people I've ever known in my life.
Right. Yeah.
Some jokes and stuff.
Normal high school stuff. Yeah, I get it.
So we're recording very late on Wednesday night, and you are a trooper for jumping on, because clearly we have to talk about tonight's episode of Big Brother and the veto ceremony and everything. If you want to, I'm game. I'm a big Brother fan. But no, in all seriousness, it was reported late Wednesday evening that the Dallas Cowboys are signing defensive end Everson Griffin, who has spent all of his career to this point with the Minnesota Vikings, the team you cover better than anybody else. Give us the 1-1. I was going to say 1-1-1, but that's wrong. The 4-1-1, the 101, whatever you want.
Yeah, sure. I thought Everson had a really great year last year. He finished around, I want to say, around top 10 in pressures and around top 12 or so in total run stops. And that's if you take, the PFF stats, which, some people can take or leave. But you take a look at multiple charting groups. You take a look at NextGen. You take a look at Sports Info Solutions. They all do their own charting, and Everson tends to end up near the top in terms of total pressure. So I thought he had a pretty good year. Obviously, because of the Vikings cap situation, they couldn't keep him at that cap number. And so he activated a void in his contract, which wasn't there until they had actually restructured him the year prior to save additional cap space. I mean, the Kirk Cousins thing kind of just adds up, right?
Which is ironic given the Dak Prescott situation now.
Right, exactly. Because of that, Griffin activated the void in his contract with, some assurance that the Vikings would try to get him back. And basically immediately they offered him a contract. I guess he didn't really like it. And a couple of other teams were interested, notably the Seahawks. I thought that for the most part, You know, he plays the run really well. He plays, pass rush really well. He's a really savvy player in terms of, you know, his ability to kind of string together a bunch of different pass rush moves. He's got a really large arsenal in terms of what he'll be able to do in terms of that pass rush, which, you know, I think that fits what, you know, DeMarcus Lawrence does really well, of course. He knows how to kind of play the whole game. Like, he used to be a pass rush specialist. And when he signed, I think at the time it was a $9 million a year contract. It was huge at the time to become a starter for the Vikings, replace Jared Allen. The biggest question was whether or not he can turn from a designated pass rusher into a full-time edge rusher, which doesn't just mean, you know, the ability to defend the run, which was a pleasant surprise, I think, for a lot of people, but also whether or not he can kind of play that long game to set up offensive tackles, to kind of learn what they do well, learn what they don't do well, and take advantage of key moments in order to generate that sack, which is something that Jared Allen was always very good at. In his 22 sack season, Allen was, I think he was like eighth in pressure rate, which I think surprises a lot of people, but it was because he picked and chose his spots for when he wanted to create a sack. And I think Everson Griffin picked that up. So really savvy player, really technically sound player, still with a fair amount of athleticism, a lot of burst, and still a fair amount of strength. He has the ability to kind of set the edge well. The only issue, aside from off-field stuff, which, you know, I'm sure we'll discuss, is that he fell off really dramatically at the back end of the season. First 12 weeks, he was like fifth or third. I just tweeted that, I should remember. But he's like fifth or third in pressures per game. Someone just retweeted it. Fifth in pressures per game. Then weeks 13 to 17, he was 60th in pressures per game. And in weeks 1 to 12, he was like 12th in run stops. In weeks 13 to 17, he didn't get any run stops at all, so he was tied for dead last. So huge issue. He did have a really great wild card game against the Saints. Not everyone gets to go up against Andres Pete, so I think that was part of it. But a big part of it was also that Zimmer moved him inside in order to account for some injuries that they had on the inside, as well as, you know, some other issues that they had in coverage. And so they wanted to get some pressure in Drew Brees' passing lanes, and that produced a ton of interior pressure. So he had a pretty good wild card game. So it's not as if he fell completely off the map, but the second half of the season, or really more accurately, the final quarter of the season was just really a completely different player. And he just didn't have the juice to play as well. So that's, I think, the biggest concern.
No, and I think that makes sense. And I saw that tweet, and I'm so happy that we're in real time here, like where it's getting retweeted and stuff. I hope you get like a sarcastic quote tweet while we're here. But looking at that particular timeline, so week 12 was the Vikings bye week last year. And ironically, week 13 was on the road in Seattle. And so, as you know, Minnesota enters the bye, 8-3, and then goes 2-3 down the stretch. So I'm just trying to understand, what would you ascribe the Everson Griffin drop off to? Would you say there was kind of a systemic drop off the Vikings? Because, I mean, everybody that watched football last year knows the Vikings were, I think, a hot team early on. They swept the NFC East and everything. They beat the Cowboys. That's kind of the most painful Cowboys game from last year that is the reason Jason Garrett's gone. But do you think there's anything to that, or do you think it's more individually on Everson himself?
I think it's Warren Everson himself. I mean, for example, week 17, and this is why I use pressures per game, not total pressures, Everson didn't play because none of the starters played. It was, you know, it's one of those week 17 games. They played against Chicago. And so that loss, it was more of a 2-2 finish to the season than a 2-3. And they almost actually beat Chicago using their backups, which I think is kind of funny. Next year Bears fans are going to use that and say Mitch Trubisky's beaten the Vikings like four times in a row.
Oh, totally.
Two of those games don't even count because it was like Chase right. Daniel and Vikings backups. But yeah, it doesn't really matter, right? The four games that Everson played, it should have been an ideal situation because you take a look at who they're playing and first, it's that Purdue quarterback. I think his name is David Blau, who played for Detroit. He actually invited pressure a fair amount. In fact, the Detroit scheme in general invited a ton of pressure that year because they like to throw the ball really deep, regardless of kind of who was back there, whether or not it was Matthew Stafford or David Blau or the Florida transfer, Louisiana Tech, Jeff Driscoll. They love to throw the ball deep and they love to kind of take their time doing it. And so that they invited pressure. Russell Wilson, obviously he's on like this Hall of Fame pace. He's a really fantastic quarterback. But one of his things is that he holds onto the ball and he invites pressure. And I'm not using sacks. I'm using pressures to kind of take a look at this. And even in situations where he probably should have been able to, Aaron Rodgers, he invites pressure too. Even in situations where you know, you're going up against teams that take on pressure, whether by design or by a flaw in the quarterback or whatever, you know, he wasn't able to produce that pressure. And then you take a look at, well, maybe it's the number of passes that they play, but he didn't get a single run stop, right? So it's not even, it, you know, because of a pass run balance, you know, he couldn't get a tackle near the line of scrimmage in the run game. And so I really think a lot of that's on Everson Griffin, especially because that Seattle game, I thought the defense actually played really, really well. They had, what, three takeaways or something like that? The problem is Seattle had four or so takeaways, and there was a defensive score from Seattle. There were like three or four short field scores from Seattle. So the defense, I thought, played well, and it's not really fair to ascribe them the 35 or 37 points that they ended up giving up in that game. So sure. I don't really think a lot of that has to do with the Vikings. I think a lot of it has to do with Everson Griffin and just kind of falling off because of age or that whatever is, reason. I have no idea what the real reason is, but I assume it's age.
No. And you mentioned your more recent tweets. Somebody did ask you kind of, hey, you know, get me hyped or whatever, what's going on here. And you were just like, well, I think he's just old, you know, and that's a reality. You mentioned Everson's off the field, you know, history. For anyone who's unaware, because a lot of people, as you know, kind of tend to have tunnel vision on their team, can you kind of walk us through the Spark Notes version of what he has dealt with since entering the NFL?
Yeah, well, it's going to have to be a Spark Notes version, otherwise we're going to be here for a while. And this isn't to bag on him. I actually think he's one of the more inspiring stories that we have in the NFL. But, you know, one of the reasons that he was a fourth round draft pick instead of a second round draft pick coming out was because of a number of concerns about his maturity. And here's how big those concerns were. After he left USC, Pete Carroll, who was the USC coach at the time, banned him from the campus. They didn't want him to influence the other players that they had, which if you're familiar with that era of USC football.
Tyron Smith there.
Yeah, well, yeah, Tyron Smith, there you go, who was probably one of the most mature players that era sure. of program produced. But, you know, they were not shy in terms of allowing their players to kind of celebrate. And so the fact that Everson Griffin was banned from that campus, or at least from the football program, I should say, you know, I think says a lot about kind of what people thought about his maturity level, because he had a ton of production. He demolished the combine. He had a really remarkable combine, and he fell to the fourth round. And a lot of that is just because he had these off the field concerns, and the concerns were so bad that at one point he was arrested twice in 3 days, and actually got tased on one of those arrests. And it's probably a credit to his sheer talent level, as well as kind of the Vikings' approach at the time, which they had Leslie Frazier as the coach, that they didn't decide to cut him or anything like that, which was really good for Everson, because after his mother died and he got married, he actually turned it around. He became a really remarkably mature person, a leader in the locker room. And you take a look at kind of how he acts and how he interacts. He didn't change his personality. He's still a super fun, funny guy. He's a great quote. I think the people in Dallas are going to love him. But the way he kind of manages decision-making, I think, was significantly more mature. And so if the story ended there, that would have been just really great. I think it would have been a really great way to kind of cap, you know, the arc of Everson Griffin, but that's just not how humans work. And it turns out mm-hmm. he actually had a lot of underlying mental health concerns that were so severe that there were times apparently when he would have to leave his house with his wife and check into a hotel so that he wouldn't be a danger to anyone, which is obviously very concerning. And one of these episodes apparently got so bad. I don't want to go into too much detail because I don't want to make it about the spectacle of the thing, but it got so bad that eventually EMT services were called, and there were concerns about violence, which didn't occur, by the way. You know, he ended up escaping the EMTs, and it became such a problem that, you know, the Vikings decided that, you know, he wouldn't be allowed back into the facility until he sought help. And the Vikings were more than willing to provide assistance to that kind of help. But this occurred at about week four of the season in 2018. And that was the Buffalo game. And I think that played a pretty big role in how the Vikings played against Buffalo. It was not a great
Josh Allen game.
Yeah, it was the Josh Allen game. And while I think that Josh Allen has the capability to hurdle Anthony Barr, regardless of whether or not Barr is distracted. And, you know, it doesn't help that Riley Reiff was playing through an injury and Jerry Hughes got like 800 pressures in that game. I think a lot of the defensive performance, a lot of that was probably impacted by the fact that they just didn't have one of their more vocal leaders there. And so he missed the bulk of the rest of the season. He came back later against the Lions, had something like 8 pressures and it looked like he had things back on track. But it was a pretty big concern that mental health became kind of front and center for the Vikings and how they approached it. I thought they did a pretty good job. But, the way that these kind of concerns from a mental health perspective materialized ended up becoming kind of a big issue when it comes to discussing, you know, Everson Griffin and whether or not, you know, he'd be available and productive for 2019, which, you know, thankfully, you know, is both of those things. And I suspect it played somewhat of a role. I don't want to, you know, speculate as to how much, but I suspect it played somewhat of a role in kind of the limited market that he had, and whether or not the fact that Clowney didn't sign, whether or not his right. age was a concern. You know, who knows how much each of these elements, you know, played a part, but I think that team certainly had questions about that. And then the fact that he dropped off at the end of the season and for a large chunk of the offseason, teams weren't holding physicals, you know, that all, you know, kind of comes together. So that was kind of another issue. And I think that no team would want to sign him without him having a plan for how he's going to approach whether or not, you know, another episode occurs or whether or not another mental health crisis occurs. And so teams need to be equipped to be able to kind of respond to that kind of crisis, which again, Dallas is actually one of the best teams in the league in being able to respond to off-field issues for their players. I think a lot of people use that as a dig and maybe it is, but at the same time, it's really an asset to the organization too. And so having that, but then Everson Griffin has to have a mental health plan too. And I imagine that was a big part of his offseason negotiations with non-Vikings teams. So that I think is all kind of part of the Everson Griffin story, as it were.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prof G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
No, I think that makes sense. And I think when you combine, his late season drop off with his age, to your point, with the stigma associated with his past, with the worldwide pandemic, it certainly is understandable why he would be available a little bit longer than most, especially to your point. You know, I think people see like a Clowney and Everson maybe both available and say they can play against one another, but that can often work, to either's demerit. I think it's also interesting that the two teams he was rumored to be in most connection with, being Seattle and Dallas. We know, ironically, Pete Carroll here, a lot of irony here, is one of the more progressive NFL head coaches. And what we are learning about Mike McCarthy is that he is seemingly of that variety. He has spoken at great length about how interested he is in helping Aldon Smith return to the NFL and the work he's done with Jay Glazer. And these are different things, but and one thing isn't emblematic of everything. But to your point, I think the Cowboys certainly are well equipped and are in a position where this makes sense. I'm curious. I have two more for you, Arif, and really appreciate your time, especially late at night. Do you think the presence of George Edwards on the Cowboys defensive staff played a role here, given his familiarity with Everson Griffin in Minnesota?
Yeah, absolutely. I think only teams that only teams that were at any point familiar with Everson Griffin were interested in him. And I think having kind of that security of having someone know who he is as a person and not have to rely on media reports or their friends in the industry, which I'm sure a lot of vetting occurred through people calling their coaching contacts and seeing what happens. That's different, right? Like if you call Mike Zimmer and say, hey, tell me about Everson Griffin. If you're a friend, he'll probably tell you. Otherwise, he'll probably tell you to F off. But if you're a friend, you know, he'll probably tell you something and you trust Mike Zimmer because that's the kind of person he is. And that's one level of security. But if you can talk to the person who's going to coach him and say, well, what do you think about this guy? And he tells you, that's way different because not only can you have a longer, more extended conversation with the guy that's literally in your building, but you can constantly have that level of check-in. So I think that people who are already familiar with Everson Griffin, I think it's not an accident that those are the two teams that were interested in him outside from the Vikings. And of course, the two teams that were in the running, Everson Griffin also probably wants at this stage in his career to be in an environment that he's comfortable with, which is why I think Minnesota was probably in the lead in terms of being able to land him. So yeah, I think it all kind of just plays together for sure.
That's very interesting. Okay, Arif, you obviously cover the Vikings to a great degree, but you also do an incredible job of touching on the whole league. And I'm just curious, as an objective person here, what are your thoughts on what the Cowboys have done? Because I do think you are certainly somebody that dabbles in the world of analytics, the buzziest word of buzzwords. And the Cowboys have kind of become Twitter's team. I know there's the R Ravens movement, but there is some love for Dallas online. And I think you share some sentiments, I would imagine, with other people and other work that's been done. And I'm curious how the Everson Griffin move kind of, you know, either reshapes or adds to your thought process on that. What are your opinions on the 2020 Dallas Cowboys?
Yeah, well, I think they made the best move in the draft when in the seventh round they picked Ben DiNucci at quarterback.
Of course.
Sorry, I've got a thing where I hate NDSU and he's a James Madison quarterback and anybody who beats NDSU is a strong player in my book. But no, aside from that, I think that, you know, obviously Dak Prescott, if you're analytically minded, is a really high level quarterback. And if you're not, you know, you've got some questions about how much each element of Dallas you need to contribute to that.
Not to cut you off, Arif, but you're in a safe place here because you are anti Carson Wentz. If my
he's a tight end.
My eyes deceive me not.
Yeah, he's a tight end. I think actually Dallas could use him, you know, at tight end.
Yeah, Blake Jarwin can ride the bench another year, and we can get Carson Wentz in here totally.
But yeah, what's really, speaking of tight ends, there's three former Vikings on the Dallas roster at tight end: Blake Bell, Cole Hikutini, and Charlie. However you pronounce his last name. But I thought they played the draft really well. I thought, you know, grabbing CeeDee Lamb and fielding kind of probably the best front three in the NFL or three wide in the NFL is really great. I thought actually undrafted free agent, the fullback that they got is one of the most athletic fullbacks aside from Tennessee's fullback that I've seen since like Marcel Reese. So
Siwo.
Siwo. Olanilua. Something like that.
Yeah, it's fun to say, but it is a chore.
Yeah, it takes a little bit of practice, but I kind of like these random elements. But if you take a look at first round, I thought CeeDee Lamb great. Second round, Trayvon Diggs really fantastic pick. Third round, Neville Gallimore. The Vikings actually were going to pick him if Dallas didn't. So presumably, I mean that's the strong sourced rumor that isn't confirmed. But you know, he's a really exciting three technique, especially in I think the Dallas system. I think grabbing players like Gerald McCoy, Dontari Poe, really great. And I think having Everson Griffen, in addition to DeMarcus Lawrence and Aldon Smith, and if Bradley Ane has kind of the athleticism to take advantage of his technical skills, you know, having that rotation is really good. And I think that's why Everson is such a great fit in Dallas, because if age is an issue, then having him on a snap count with all of these other really high value veterans, I think can really kind of maximize what he does. And then of course, Rendell Carter, another James Madison alum, he's obviously going to make the roster and outshine all of them. Dallas has, like you said, it's Twitter's team. It's also Madden's team. Maybe it's not a mistake that one of the Madden ratings adjusters is a Dallas Cowboys fan, but their total talent level is just extraordinarily high. And so from a Madden ratings perspective, it's actually pretty difficult to beat Dallas. And then you take a look at kind of why that would be the case, and you go through their roster, and I think it's really easy to like this team. I really wish that they had kept, who's that corner that jumped like 14 feet in the broad jump? God, I forgot his name.
Byron Jones.
Byron Jones. Man, I love him. But other than that, just really, I think, a really well-constructed team. Having someone like Ha-Ha Clinton-Dix at safety, having, that linebacker core that they have, it's really difficult to find an area where you can say that that's probably a weakness, aside from tight end, which you can obviously just scheme around. And Dallas, I think, is really set up for a run. And you know, hopefully, you know, next year they can grab Carson Wentz and solve their tight end problem.
No, I agree. And I think a lot of people look at the tight end problem as, you know, as a plus, in that it inhibits their ability to abandon 11 personnel. You know what I mean?
Right, you know, that's true.
And so it's almost like, look, let's, there was thought, I forget who was recently on the market. I forget the guy from Hard Knocks, the Chargers tight end, that is all the rage. Everybody loves him.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Because
yeah.
he hates getting cut. But
the thought like is, like all the other players who embrace it.
Yeah. The thought is, do not sign any tight ends ever. Just stay in a,
because just, I mean, just let it be. Yeah,
exactly. It's hard enough to get, you know, like Tony Pollard on the field or whatever. And so those are interesting thoughts, and I think a lot of Cowboys fans are certainly appreciative of
let me add on to that real quick. I know this is just a super quick thing, but one of the things I found out when I was writing up pieces about the Vikings is that nearly every team, regardless of the talent level they have at tight end or wide receiver, is more efficient, even after you account for like down and distance and game situation, in 11 personnel than they are in 12 personnel. And that includes the Vikings, who had a 7th round pick starting for them at wide receiver after Adam Thielen went down. And he was competing for snaps with like a 5'8 UDFA who can't catch. Like that's like, that was the level of receiver that they had, and they were still more efficient in 11 personnel than they were in 2 tight end, where they've got Irv Smith and Kyle Rudolph. And, the Eagles are the same way. They had a quarterback at wide receiver in Greg Ward. They have 2 really just phenomenally good tight ends. And they were still more efficient in 11 personnel than they were in 12 personnel, except in goal line scenarios. And I think that if you can manipulate your coach into not putting 2 tight ends out there by just not signing any, I think you're probably doing a good job as a general manager. As much as it pains me to say Jerry Jones has been good at being a general manager for the past like 5 years, ever since Steven interfered and prevented him from drafting Johnny Manziel, he's been just a really good general manager. I think that, that's a good way just to prevent your coach from shooting themselves in the foot. And also, I mean, it's not like Mike McCarthy knows how to use tight ends anyway.
Right. No. Yeah. I remember when the Cowboys first hired him, JerMichael Finley was making the rounds, and I was like, I don't know that you're the guy that that needs to be. But I, and now kind of realizing this, I was listening to the PFF forecast recently, and Chris Collinsworth was just kind of lauding the Cowboys, and you know, obviously Dak Prescott is kind of now Twitter's quarterback in some way, and he is kind of emblematic of this 11 personnel idea, because he had this incredible, remarkable season last year with zero help from the tight end in the passing game and zero help from Ezekiel Elliott in the passing game. So Dak sort of you know, is like the poster boy for 11 personnel utilizing the three best receivers you could possibly have, which he incidentally has. Ironically, this was in a season where the Cowboys just paid a running back $90 million and brought Jason Witten out of retirement, you know? So some really conflicting ideas going on there. But now Jason Witten is a Raider and life is weird and Everson Griffin is a Cowboy. Arif, you do such a great job covering the NFL, always with a lot of flair, always with a lot of style. Like I said, follow Arif on Twitter at Arif Hassan NFL for all things Vikings and the occasional NFL nugget. I know you also dabble in the political world. It feels like everybody does these days, the Wide Left podcast. Anything else you want to add? Maybe something you've streamed over the last few months that you would recommend?
Well, first of all, I'll plug the Norse Code podcast, which is a Vikings related podcast. I'll also plug my favorite sleeper on the Dallas roster, which is Cedric Wilson. Saw him at the Senior Bowl, Boise State. Can't get enough of him. I wish he could see the field.
He has a hive. So
oh, wait, really? You know. Actually?
There Fantastic. Is, a, I mean, but well, to be fair, this is the time of year, you know, where there's
true.
Those guys.
That's true. Yeah, yeah.
But there is there's the Cedric Wilson hive and the Devin Smith hive hate one another. But there's room for both. Because after the Cowboys, you know,
Devin Smith, the former Jets and Ohio State receiver, right?
Yeah, you might remember he had a great game on the road in Washington last year early on. I think it was week 2. And then, you know, at that moment it was, oh, Steven did it again.
I was a Devin Smith stan when the Jets drafted him, and I've given up on him. I think I'm a Cedric Wilson guy now.
Yeah, and Cedric Wilson got away from number 16 and is now in the slimmer 11. So, I mean, I'm more on board now than I was. But I'm glad to know that he's your pet cat, so to speak. But any other plugs? What else you got?
I haven't been streaming a ton. I've been reading a bunch of random novels and stuff. So let's see. If someone wants, it's really not that great, honestly, but it's just consumable and it's taken up all my time, which means I guess I like it. So it's kind of a guilty pleasure, but it's a thriller series in the style of Tom Clancy without, and this is where I'll get a little bit political, without being as baldly conservative as Tom Clancy just is. By the way, was like inches away from owning the Vikings, Tom Clancy.
You brought it back. Well done.
Yeah. It's just such a strange time. But it's the Joe Ledger series by Jonathan Mayberry, who actually I think he's a centrist Democrat, which is a very weird political ideology. It doesn't appear that much in the books, honestly, but it's just a weird political ideology for someone to write special ops thrillers. But his first book is Patient Zero. It's a zombie book. I just went right through them. It's not that great, but I can't get enough of it, so I have to recommend it. And then for a series I actually recommend, if you're into young adult dystopic fiction, like The Hunger Games.
Who isn't? Yeah.
yeah, right. Yeah, who isn't? The Legend series by Marie Lu. Actually pretty good, unlike the Joe Ledger series, which I've given the author money, so I can't really, you know, bag it too much. But I just went through it. And if you like zombie books, it reads really fast and it reads super easy. So dude, I went through like 8 books in a month. It's pretty fast.
Wow. Okay. Well, I haven't read a non-sports related book in a while. Right now I'm combing through Football Outsiders Almanac, but after I'm done, maybe I'll give this a whirl. Who knows? But at that point, maybe it'll be football season. Maybe it won't. As you mentioned, we do live in some precarious times. Arif, thank you so much for the time. Thank you so much for the information, for the suggestions. And see, everybody else, you know, they just want to give us TV to watch, but you're broadening our horizons. You're enlightening our minds. And for that, we are eternally grateful. I know you've been dying to watch Big Brother since we started the conversation. So,
I'll be sure to get around to it.
Arif, thanks so much. Have a great week, and we'll catch up soon enough.
Yeah, you too, man.
Want to give a huge, big time gigantic, galactic shout out to RV for taking the time to join us. I hit him up super late on Wednesday night. It was about 9:30 p.m. Central Time when I messaged him. He was kind enough to jump on and really, I thought, educate us all on who Everson Griffin is as a football player, who he has been as a person, kind of the history of Everson Griffin, because there is a lot. It's likely that somebody told you, hey, I heard this, I heard that, etc. Well, now you heard the truth. You know exactly who Everson Griffin is, and there is a lot of reason to be excited about him. I think Arif's point about, you know, Everson being on a snap count of sorts is really, 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 really important, because we now know the Cowboys have somebody. They're like a baseball team with a great, you know, bullpen. That's who the Cowboys are when it comes to that right defensive end spot. We know and expect Marcus Lawrence to be the guy, to be the war daddy, as we talked about, on the left side. Now the Cowboys have rotational options on the opposite side. That is a big deal. We've talked about many times how we need, the Cowboys need, I should say, Leighton Van Der Esch to kind of really not elevate his game, but play it at a sustained rate, a sustained legitimate rate, because without him doing that, the Cowboys defense is kind of up a creek, and the Cowboys are buying themselves more room for error by getting more talented players in place. Good for them. So yeah, hope you enjoyed our emergency episode. It got my juices flowing. It had been a while since we did one of these, and I really, really, really enjoyed it. So this was our second episode of the Ocho, that is, for Thursday, the third day. The first one, we recapped everything we heard in Wednesday's State of the Union Cowboys address, all the comments from Jerry Jones, Stephen Jones, Mike McCarthy, and Dak Prescott. Went over them. If you want to go back earlier in your podcast feed, you certainly can. Later on today, on Thursday, you'll get a brand new episode of Broadcasting the Boys with Ari Temkin and Roy White. Remember that if you subscribe to the Blogging the Boys podcast feed, we are available on all major podcast platforms. Just search for Blogging the Boys, subscribe. If you can, give us a rating, write a review. If you subscribe, you get two, sometimes in the case of the third day here, you get three episodes every single day. When something happens in the world of the Dallas Cowboys, like signing Everson Griffin, we jump on, we write about it, we tweet about it, we talk about it, we pod about it, because all of us here, we love the Dallas Cowboys and we want to enjoy all of this together. We are so grateful for you and for you choosing us to be part of your Dallas Cowboys experience. So subscribe to the pod. We're gonna have a fun season together. I truly believe that. At least we're gonna try like hell. Hey, Everson Griffin, it really happened. I mean, big time props to the Cowboys, and it's been a long time, and this sentiment is starting to be shared by a lot of people. It's been a long time since the Cowboys, since the optimism surrounding the Cowboys has made sense and has been justifiable, because in many years before this, it has been kind of not empty optimism, but it's kind of like when you eat a piece of celery, like you eat something, but it just really isn't anything, it really doesn't have any taste, but it is something by definition. But this is a big juicy steak. So let's get pumped. Hey, you do me a favor. All right, you just do me a huge favor. Give a big time shout out to Arif Hassan on Twitter at Arif Hassan NFL for taking the time to join us. And do me another favor. Have the absolute best Thursday of all time. You know why? Because you deserve it. We will see you mañana, my friends. As always, go Cowboys and peace out.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.